Hell yeah.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Detail the best gaming podcast in the world.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Gaming Guru Podcast. We have got a great topic for you today. My name is Gareth Woods, and of course, I'm joined by Tim Lester. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well, sir. I'm doing very well. How's things going your side?
Yeah, very good. We had my kid's birthday party. Can't believe I managed to raise a five-year-old now. Definitely feeling like a dad gamer at this stage, especially when some of the birthday presents involve buying Minecraft and those sorts of games. We've reached
V-Bucks?
That stage of our... No V-Bucks yet. Not quite yet. But certainly we've reached the Minecraft stage of our Mario and Minecraft. But the topic we have today, I want to jump in pretty quickly because it's a real juicy one. We've spoken about before the console wars, you know, about Xbox versus PlayStation, or in the past, you know, it would have been kind of the Sega Mega Drive versus Nintendo NES. And so at the moment, the console wars traditionally fought by Xbox and PlayStation, you know, and Nintendo sitting in the corner. I don't know, eating paste or whatever, but doing its own thing, totally oblivious to what the other two are doing. But we're not talking about the console wars. We've spoken about that enough, and it's kind of a topic that's been done to death. What we're talking about today is a war that's happening in the space of digital distribution. And the two kind of heavyweight contenders in that realm are Steam, which we know all too well, and I suppose new kid on the block, Epic. So of the owners of Fortnite, it's probably their most famous kind of title. But obviously, there's some others playing there. There's, you know, everyone wants a piece of that digital pie. There's Origin and, you know, Blizzard and Ubisoft all kind of doing their thing. But really, we're talking about Steam versus Epic. That is the big title fight that we're talking about here. But I think before we go into it, perhaps, Tim, you want to elaborate on, you know, what's the big deal? Why is it important to have competition in digital distribution? What are the risks of having a monopoly? You know, maybe you can set the stage for us a little bit.
Yeah, so, you know, for the longest time, I guess as long as we've had commerce, we've had issues of monopolies, of free trade. And these are really important for both healthy economies, also for consumers, because, you know, and that's led to a lot of legislation and laws around competition, around monopolies, anti-monopoly laws, that just makes for a healthy, vibrant economy for everyone, where, you know, if you're entering the markets, you know that you'll have a place of sale, you know that you'll have access to a client base, to consumers. But the legislation is taking a long time to catch up with the advancements that have been made in digital storefronts, particularly Valve and Steam, for instance, who, you know, got off to a rocking start, you know, back when I was in high school, you know, when I had friends being like, yo, have you tried out Counter-Strike? Just download it. What's the Steam thing? I guess I'll download that. And since then, it's been a bit of a roller coaster in that Valve has grown to such a size that, you know, they've just been printing money.
Yeah, 100%. I think a lot of comments have been, you know, from people who work there going, in the good days before competition, it was a printing press. It was literally just printing money. That a lot of guys are speculating that's the reason why we haven't seen Half-Life 3, because it's like there's no financial imperative to bring out new games. They just don't need to. All the money comes from selling other people's games.
Yeah. And, you know, the danger with this is, you know, like less around the legislation and more around the fact that, you know, there aren't very many places for developers to sell their games. You know, in a recent lawsuit that Valve is now facing for alleged digital storefront monopoly, the plaintiffs that have brought this on, the defendants are, you know, of the likes of CD Projekt, who own GOG, Ubisoft, KChamp Games, Rust LLC, Devolver Digital, all saying that in Steam's distribution agreement, it states that any seller agrees to provide Steam with the best terms it might give others, renders competition from other storefronts moot. Basically, yeah. Valve gets the best price. They have the biggest client base. They're integrated into most people's machines. They've created an incentive structure that is heavily skewed in their direction, and it makes it increasingly difficult for other storefronts to get a foothold, in the market and gain back some of that market share. They can't compete on pricing, even when they try to put various deals, discounts. In fact, I think you can get Hitman 3 cheaper on some other digital stores than you can from Steam for this very reason, because they're trying to incentivize bringing customers over to that space. But we still see the majority of sales coming out of Steam. And this has kind of been going on for a long time. And, legislation is slowly catching up, but pressure seems to be coming from lots of different directions. And it's led the industry as a whole in a really strange direction, because we haven't really experienced this before. We've had monopolies on, in physical retail space, and a lot of the legs have been cut off of those over the years in order to try and level the playing field. But let's say a small example, like the far right wing communication app, for instance, Parler, that recently got canceled. That app was listed on the App Store and was listed on Google Play Store. Those were its point of sale. After the January 6th insurrection in the United States, Apple announced they were removing from the store. Subsequently, Google also announced they were removing it out of the store. And very soon after that, the hosting platform, Amazon, said they were just removing it from their servers. And almost within a couple of days, Parler no longer has any place to sell their, it has no point of sale, it has no client base, and that's just because someone said so, right? I'd liken it to, let's say, if there was only Pick and Pay and ShopRite in South Africa, and both of them decided they would no longer be selling Cadbury's chocolates because of whatever reason, no one would be getting Cadbury's, man.
It'd be much more difficult. Chocolates.
Yeah,
because I imagine something like a Parler would still be able to sell through, its own website, whatever. But if that's where the majority of your transactions are coming from, and those are pulled. And it creates a scary scenario where, there's a large potential that, a lot of sales are demand driven, where the consumers are pulling sales through a storefront. They want the product. Enough PR and hype has been created that the consumers want the product and will consume it wherever it is. But there is a lot of games that are sold from a push mechanic, as in, these are the games we are presenting to you for sale. And I've been guilty of it before, where I'm looking for a game. I'm bored with what I have to play, and I go to the storefront and just search for games. And I'm then definitely privy to, suggestions from whatever storefront or whatever marketing, YouTube, Twitter, whatever, pushed towards me. And so that's dangerous, I guess, when there's a monopoly, when there's only one store to go to, and, they've got their recommended for you. But there are plenty of times when those recommended for me games are not genres that I play, have not been endorsed by my friends or owned by my friends or given good reviews by my friends. So it's like, why is this being pushed to me? Because there's obviously some sort of financial agenda, either pushed by Valve or paid for by one of the developers through Valve to push those ads to me. And so it becomes, almost talking about our discussion last week about reviews being honest, it gets to the point where a lot of those promotions are dishonest. They're not actually targeted at me. They've just been bought. And we get to a stage where, your opinion and therefore the games that you buy are then being bought because of a lack of competition. So, it's definitely not an ideal space. But I guess, we've got to this point because for the longest time, the monopoly was allowed because, like you said, the legislature wasn't keeping up. But also, there wasn't competition. It's one thing you can start a you know, what they call it, anti-competition and antitrust kind of lawsuits when you have, you know, competition. But when you're the de facto monopoly because there is no one else, like was the case for Steam. Steam was the only digital distribution platform. They were basically seen as competition to retail, not competition to digital distribution, because they created the genre. And what was crazy is looking at some of the earlier stats, they take 30% cut of all PC sales, you know, because that was the only way to sell games. There was no other digital platforms. You know, only now you're getting EA, Blizzard, Ubisoft all having their own platforms. But it was pretty much Steam, and then to a lesser extent in the independent space, places like itch.io and Humble. But really, we're talking not even a drop in the ocean compared to what Steam was generating. I mean, a stat I pulled off was in 2017, $4 billion in revenue for Valve in game sales alone. So that's not in-game transactions. That's not you buying cosmetic items or season pass DLCs or anything like that. That's literally selling games. Their 30% share of selling other people's games was $4 billion. And that's ridiculous. And so fast forward, I guess, a couple of years to Epic arriving on the scene. And so obviously Epic, most famous for Fortnite, they immediately kind of launched their store, saw that Steam was the place, kind of lots of fat there to go after. And, you know, when I was reading up on this topic, a lot of people are saying they used a very much Amazonian in the sense of Jeff Bezos's tactic of going, my opponent's margin is my hunting ground, because if you know that your opponent, in this case Steam, is operating at a 30% margin, that being their cut, obviously you don't know what their operating costs are, but if they've got 30% to play with, you can cut into that. And so immediately off the bat, they were offering developers 12% revenue cut. So immediately, just by moving your game from Steam to Epic, you would basically increase revenue by 18%. Obviously, notwithstanding the larger store base that you potentially are advertising to more people. And then on top of that, because Epic also owns the Unreal Engine, and normally there's a 5% royalty fee for developing your games on Unreal, now they would waive that as well if you did an exclusivity agreement to sell your game on the store. So suddenly, instead of automatically losing 5% and then losing 30% to Valve, you recoup that 5% and you recoup 18% by going to Epic. So definitely a massive incentive to move your games to Epic. And we saw a lot of guys do that. I mean, Borderlands 3 was a pretty big exclusive for Epic. And the other, Metro Exodus, in fact, was a Steam exclusive and then got pulled halfway. They moved it to Epic. And in fact, what happened was Steam, while they honored the pre-orders that happened, they didn't allow any future sales. So any games bought post that point that them moving to Epic were, you know, disallowed or whatever.
Yeah, so I mean, this is sort of one response to the growing monopoly that Steam had accumulated over like the, you know, the past two decades, right? And it's a really aggressive response. And so what that kind of signals to me is that, do you think that this will become like the new median, or at least like the new normal, when it comes to like newer entrants to the market trying to get a foothold in the digital market share, using Epic as like a blueprint, or you know, of an aggressive business model that could potentially eat into not only Steam but any other, you know, people in the playing field, which says to me that, you know, making the comparison with like with retail again, right? If I have my new brand of like Gaming Guru t-shirts and we want to get them into stores, you know, chances are we will approach as many storefronts as possible to see who will like stock us. But in this case, when it comes to entrance to the market, we see the sort of closing their doors, buying up exclusives, and essentially like slicing up the market.
Yeah. No, I think that is definitely the way we'll see things going. If anything, that is confirmed by the fact that you're having these big developers creating their own platforms. So we've already mentioned Ubisoft Origins for EA. Blizzard's got their own, and they know that, you know, they'll put their marketing spend into making sure that there's a pull mechanic to their games. So new Diablo comes out, people want the game, they will go get it from the only place they can get it from, besides obviously brick and mortar retail, is they go and get it from Blizzard store. That is pretty much the only way. Similarly with EA, similarly with Ubisoft. Obviously at the Ubisoft at the moment, as an example, you can still get your Assassin's Creed games and, you know, Rainbow Six Siege and all that on Steam. But I think you're going to see things go the way that Activision have gone, where, you know, for example, we look now, like you can get Call of Duty all the way up to Black Ops 3. Then suddenly every game since then is only available from the Blizzard store. So you can't, you can no longer get them. They're still, you know, in-game purchase things like, you know, on PlayStation Network, you can still like buy credits on Warzone, all that. You can do the kind of in-game purchase stuff, but buying the games from PC at least is only through the Activision store. What I think you're going to see, though, is guys like Amazon step into this space, because you got, you know, it's not like they aren't au fait with the digital distribution space. I mean, they were the first guys selling books digitally and audiobooks. And so it's not something they wouldn't be totally okay with. The issue at the moment is that access to inventory. And it feels like those who have, they would still have to get the games from other developers. And at the moment, it looks like the big developers are all creating their own stores. I think where this will still be relevant, though, is going to be for smaller developers, so indie storefronts and the likes, who are just trying to get as big a market as possible and are definitely in a bit of a bidding war at the moment for that space. You know, we're talking about 30% cuts and 12% cuts and, you know, waiving of royalty fees and all that. It certainly seems to be like the war is on from these two stores in particular to get as much content on their stores as possible. But yeah, I mean, even with this, a lot of commentators have said that Epic, it feels like, are overplaying their hand a little bit.
Right.
And so Steam obviously has, you know, two of the biggest games in the world. It has Dota and CSGO funding its you know, its initial entry. And with that, massive games like Half-Life and that. So it had the money and all that to get into the space in the beginning when there was no competition. Epic coming in much later, you want to call it the cost to entry, like the ticket to compete cost a lot more than it did when Steam started this whole thing. And so obviously they have Fortnite, which is generating, you know, more money than any of us will see in our lifetime, but it's kind of has only got that. And while Fortnite has been super popular, definitely doesn't have the legacy in terms of longevity of Counter-Strike and Dota in terms of, you know, staying power. And while it's still super popular and it's always going to be one of the most popular games on Twitch as we see at the moment, how long that lasts is yet to be seen. It definitely hit that kind of pop culture zeitgeist moment where, you know, every kid and all the merch and everything that goes with it and World Cups. But how long will that stay? Because in all honesty, from a storefront point of view, what they launched with was vastly inferior. I mean, I was just looking at some of the stories and comments. As an example, you could not put multiple games into your cart when you wanted to check out. It was check out that game, sold. Next one, next one, next one. Which obviously you don't have to be an expert in e-commerce to know that the more transactions, the more risk of mistakes. You know, a single mistake or a single like credit card issue that blocks a purchase or, you know, doesn't refund a client, could be a refund, is then a risk of losing. Risk of losing a client altogether, bad reviews, stop future clients from joining. You want it to be as seamless as possible. You want people loading up massive carts and leaving within one sale. So anything that makes it more difficult is going to, you know, lose potential customers. So that was an issue. They had just vastly less inventory because, you know, Steam can launch and go, yay, we've got 30 titles that you can buy. And you go, oh, this is okay because it's the only storefront. But if Epic launches and only has, I don't know how many they launched with, but if it only has 30 titles, people are going, why the hell would I use this compared to Steam? Steam's got like probably 30 titles launching per day, you know? So inventory is a big issue. But I think the truth of the matter is games that are available on both, the majority of the sales go through Steam. because it is just a better user experience. And we're seeing a lot of issues now coming out from a user point of view with having multiple libraries, friends lists, games not being allowed to play via crossplay. It seems ridiculous, for example, that you can have games that will allow a PlayStation user, an Xbox user, a Switch user, and a PC user all to play together, except it won't allow two PC players to play on different storefronts. Like the people playing on via Steam can't play with the people playing via Epic, which seems absolutely ridiculous, you know? So,
And while we're on the topic of Epic Games, I want to sort of rewind the clock back a bit to like 2017. I think that was kind of when they sort of came out in the block when like Fortnite was popping, maybe 2016, 2018. And they started really putting a lot of their resources into this aggressive strategy of grabbing as many exclusives as they could, including stealing exclusives outright from Steam, you know, developers that already had deals with Valve, and they must have paid a fortune to be like, well, we'll just buy you out of that deal, you know, and we'll cover the rest of the cost of your development. Or, you know, there must have been a huge incentive structure there. But I remember when Epic first like stepped out onto the block, the story that you mentioned now of, you know, these reports that came in of how bad their storefront was and it wasn't finished. And I felt like that was, a lot of those stories were pushback that were coming from the, let's say, like the pro Steam community. Because at the time, like we all felt like Steam was our friend, right? We felt like Valve, it was weird. Like any competition to Valve was like a slight on gamers in a way. I felt like there was, like the way that I felt in that moment back then, I was like, you know, Epic, who do you think you are coming in here trying to do X, Y, and Z? You don't even have a shopping cart, bro. You know, Steam's had that for years. And it was almost, there was an anti-competition sentiment coming from consumers, you know, let's say me included. Like, did you feel it all that way? Like, were you on the fence there? Like, you know what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think part of it is, and I think we need to be fair to our particular generation, which would have, you know, grown up with retail, traditional retail, and now this was a new thing. And so, like, in a weird way, feels like, I wouldn't say we own it, but that we definitely feel attachment to the process of, like, now buying our games on Steam, which is why things like, you know, people showing off their libraries and the value and almost, you know, all the memes of Steam sales steal our wallets sales. And heck, even those ridiculous things like buying games gave you trading cards that you then traded with people to like get your profile all those badges.
Pictures of like Gabe Newell as God, like just with the sales 100%. Just raining down on us, you know,
because it was this unique environment that didn't exist anywhere else. But now I imagine a generation of kids who've only ever seen, you know, PlayStation Network, Xbox Live, Nintendo eStore. Yeah. That's how you buy games. Like
those Steam memes with mom, dad's kind of hit a bit differently.
Yeah, exactly. Days. Yeah, it almost
and it's
feels
weird, like looking back
Steam
on those memes now, no?
Yeah, it feels like Steam is almost this big monopoly like machine as opposed to the, you know, the small indie guy taking on brick and mortar stores nowadays. So I definitely feel like that persona of Steam has changed.
Right.
Yeah, I think we need to unpack a little bit of like, what is the real benefit to consumers? Because, I mean, no one's arguing about the benefit to consumers in digital distribution. I mean, we've chatted before. It's like, you don't no longer have to worry about pre-orders and you no longer have to worry about out of stocks. You know, I'm thinking of the kind of things that we used to worry about in brick and mortar, where if this game wasn't pre-ordered enough, it didn't arrive. If you didn't pre-order, there was a risk that you didn't get stock. You also had, because pricing was less transparent, you had to often, like, you go to a store and it's 300 Rand more expensive. And you're like, what are you doing? It's cheaper down the road. Then they're like, go buy it down the road. And it's not like you're shopping for a deal. You're just shopping around not to get completely schneid by the pricing. But But digital has kind of put a blanket pricing on everything.
Yeah.
But now we get to the stage where digital is just eating up brick and mortars alive. And let's be honest, from a developer point of view, owning your own store means A, not paying royalties to other stores. You know, we're talking about these 30% cuts and all that. Right. It also means you're not paying all the exorbitant add-on costs of retail. So that's the logistic cost of getting your stock from whatever your factory is down to South Africa. It's the paying insurance of all the stolen units or the ship that sank or whatever. It's translating into multiple languages and printing it in multiple languages. It's deals you have to cut with the retailers to buy back any stock that wasn't sold. It's all those sort of things. And now you don't have to worry. You just press go on your server once it's live, and that's it. Whether you sell one copy or a million copies doesn't really matter. It's unlimited. And so, you know, if you were making, let's say for R1,000, you were making R300 a copy a game. Now you're making R500 a copy a game. And so that those savings aren't being transferred to us, the consumers. So, and a large part of that is because there's still this tenuous balance between digital and retail. Because I feel that the minute there's a studio that decides to give a direct financial incentive to buying digital over retail, retail will react poorly against them. Can you imagine a store where, so Blizzard sells a copy of World of Warcraft in a BT Games for R500, but on the shop, you know, their own shop, they're selling it for R400. Not a special, you know, there are time specials and all that, but like launch day price, R100 cheaper if you buy digital from them. BT Games is just going to go, well, then it's a waste putting them on my shelf.
Yeah.
I would rather put my shelf, you know, have them filled with games that don't try and screw me over in the back end, you know. So then you go from maybe selling, you were selling more copies digitally, but maybe you're selling 100 copies in retail. You now sell zero because all the stores have gone, screw you. I'd rather give that space to, you know, your opponents. And so now your opponents sell more copies. So that's why it feels like there's this tenuous balance between digital and retail, where digital, even though they could crush retail, they don't want to be the first to move because they will immediately give any retail advantage to their competitors. And so at the moment, you know, even though it definitely costs them less to run digitally, you and I are not seeing the benefits of that. Yeah, what are some of the benefits you potentially think are there for digital distribution? And then with that, the risk that of a monopoly ruining those.
Yeah, you know, in trying to look at sort of the upsides for consumers, it could we all feel it in our pockets, right? So any sort of price margins that gets put on by retail stores because, you know, they need to get their cuts, or distribution margins, or, you know, all that stuff sort of falls away, and you have, you know, the convenience of browsing these, let's say, various digital storefronts from your own home. But I think the issue that we're going to quickly get to as this war sort of like heats up is that all of these platforms seem to be moving away from a world where we have an integrated multi-platform cross-play, you know, where I can, you know, get like competing prices on the same item from different digital storefronts, for instance, where the competition between these different storefronts seems to be getting less as they buy up more and more real estate in the industry. And a lot of the other, let's say, developers that are only selling their own products, for instance, like the Blizzards, like the Ubisofts, the Activisions, or what have you, they're sort of adopting the like Netflix subscription pricing model, where I can have, you know, EA access on my PlayStation or on my, you know, Xbox One, and have access to their games via that. And you can, you know, through that, I'm bypassing retail altogether because I don't need to go down to BT Games to pick up a copy of Need for Speed. You know, I can just create an account on EA Access. The first month is like free or something, and I have access to the entire library, you know? So that's another way that these, that developers at storefronts are skirting around brick and mortar, kind of just taking them out of the conversation entirely. you know, I can't create a subscription model with BT Games, you know, not that I not that I want to, right? But it's just as an example.
Yeah.
So instead of creating this, you know, vibrant integrated economy, we have these storefronts building up walls, buying up exclusives, trying to establish themselves as their own monopolies in contrast to these other storefronts that we've chatted about. So following a similar blueprint to, let's say, a Steam, a Valve, or an Epic Games, and creating just as many problems in the process. So instead of working with their contemporaries in order to try and find out what the best solution would be for the consumer, they're just trying to make their building as strong as possible, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I'm interested then how something like a Xbox Games Pass or Game Pass kind of throws the cat among the pigeons with all that. Because imagine, for example, you know, Xbox is doing its thing. It's picked up Bethesda now, confirmed. It's adding all these titles that are also available on Steam, some of which are available on Epic. And how does that just absolutely, you know, throw spanners, pigeons, whatever you want, into the digital storefront space, where now you can, essentially using the same hardware, play games that, you know, in the past you would have had to fork out 600 odd rand, you can now play for 100 rand a month unlimited.
Yeah. It's one of the best, like, value for money
subscription
models, like, kind of on the market at the moment. And for me, I think that Games Pass is a bit more akin to what I'd expect the market to be, like, moving towards. In that it's not inherently it's not like inherently Microsoft leaning, right? They're still embracing other platforms. They're not so much putting all their eggs into exclusivity basket. It's more like, well, you know, buy a subscription and play on your hardware as long as it isn't Sony. But they seem to be embracing more of like mixing up the way that they want to sell these products.
Yeah, so, I mean, a lot of people talk about Game Pass as Microsoft's attack against Sony, you know, and, you know, depending on where you sit on the issue, you might say winning in that space, you know, value for money for consumers, variety of games, all that. But a lot of ways you could see it as an attack on the PC market. You know, it's people aren't talking about how much of this is an attack on Steam or Epic. You know, a way for essentially gamers to, you know, if you're a PC gamer, Xbox gamer, or both those platforms, to be essentially play everything for one subscription is, you know, is definitely a coup on the digital distribution space.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I think what will be interesting is to see, as much as Steam were the first digital distribution kind of platform, and now others have followed that trend, Microsoft making waves with Xbox Games, with Game Pass, whether you will see any of either the traditional kind of distribution platforms creating their own subscription model. I mean, I could definitely see Steam offering some sort of Steam Library Pass,
right,
where maybe not all the games, but certain tiers of games available. Maybe at a premium tier, you're getting like the best games. The next tier, the next 100 independent only games, whatever. All sorts of different varieties. And then I could also see definitely something like a Blizzard, where their games are so integrated anyway. You know, how they just offer this Blizzard Pass, where you can play all the games. Especially since a lot of their games have gotten into the games as a service model, where just having the game is one thing, but you're still spending money in the game. So, you know, I buy the Blizzard Pass and that allows me to, you know, play Diablo and play Hearthstone, whatever. But I'm still going to have to buy cards. I'm still going to have to, spend money on subscriptions and all that. So the Pass is almost like a subscription in WoW, but for the other games. I'm still required to, you know, if I'm Overwatch, buy loot packs if I don't want to grind and all that. So, you know, it's not like they're giving up, like, a lot of money. I'd have to know what the numbers are. But it's still like there are models that allow them to still purchase or at least generate more income. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that's the way that things go. I think at the moment, from a consumer point of view, we definitely saw the benefit of digital distribution. I worry that with all these different storefronts at the moment, it's basically just going to become several other ecosystems that don't talk to each other and make things less convenient. You know, we hinted at some of them, like having multiple libraries to search through. You know, you and I might buy a game that we want to play together on different storefronts and then have issues, you know, playing with each other because it can't, you know, find each other's teams or as friends on the same friends list. All that sort of, like, they're more nuisance factors than anything else.
Right.
But that stuff does add up, you know, in a space where you want to say the reason digital distribution took off was that it was just super convenient. I don't have to worry about thousands of discs getting scratched or lost or stolen. And, you know, being able to carry my games library with me for all time.
I like it from my side, you know, as we see these storefronts, you know, push in different directions with a lot of new business models and technologies, inevitably, whichever direction they go in is probably going to see a further shrink in the retail markets. Because as we've noted, the trends seem to be towards creating silos of these kind of economies separated from each other rather than encouraging communication between them to, you know, the betterment of the gaming community at large.
Yeah. Okay, to sign off, what do you think breaks next? So we had a monopoly, we had, you know, Steam doing its thing, you got a big, powerful, you know, Epic with its Fortnite money coming in and wanting to crash a party and get some of that, focusing mostly on developers and not consumers. You've got this battle now for exclusivity with a lot of the title holders, or at least the developers, creating their own little silos. You've got Games Pass coming in and saying, hey, you don't even have to buy games, you can just sort of rent them. What do you reckon is going to break next? What's the big next big play or the next, you know, thing that comes crashing down?
I think the next, that's a tough one. I'd say maybe, I was going to say maybe like no disc, no box, you know, version, but like that's the digital version.
yeah.
Let
me jump in with my answer and then maybe you can come up with one. But I think for me, you're going to see potentially some of the big traditional retailers step into the space, an Amazon or an Alibaba type, you know, step in and do their own kind of distribution. And failing which, I see the proliferation of subscription models. I see, you know, something like Games Pass, you know, becoming something that Steam does or Epic does or Sony or whatever. So it ends up being like we're seeing, and I think the trend there that I'm following is what we're seeing in TV, where, you know, you can argue that Netflix was the first, but now it's like Amazon Prime, Showmax, Hulu, all of them. Like, and what is the deal breaker there? What shows you can and can't get on their subscription versus the others? So it's going to be a case where, you know, there are only certain shows you can watch on Netflix. A lot of them are in multiple places, but there are certain shows you can only watch on Amazon Prime. And so I can see particularly something like Amazon, who already own Twitch, integrating some sort of Twitch / Games Pass / Amazon Prime offering, you know, as an entertainment package. Watch these streamers, play these games, watch these shows exclusively on Amazon.
And then Tencent buys Valve.
And then Disney buys them all. But yeah, certainly an exciting place to be in. Any final thoughts there, Tim?
No thoughts, empty head.
No thoughts. So as always, it's been great chatting about some of these more technical topics in the world of gaming, besides just mashing buttons and getting high scores. If you've got any thoughts or comments, please do get hold of us on Twitter at guru_podcast. Or you can contact Tim at Tim and Efficient. I'm at the Gareth Woods. Always enjoy discussing these topics with you. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another brand new juicy topic to sink our teeth into. But until then, enjoy your digital game libraries while they last, before they disappear. We didn't even talk about that. I mean, as a topic, is the fact that
about
like,
ownership,
ownership. Like, you don't actually own these games. But anyway, that's potentially something to dive into at a future date. But enjoy those games, whether you have them on disc or you have them on the cloud. And until next time, go out and play some games.